Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. Back to the usual pattern, and we have some good news in the sense that there is clearly more to the Hillary Clinton email story. We all knew there was, but the latest news that we get keeps proving that the Clinton campaign's assertion that there's much ado about nothing is simply untrue. This is the Fox News version of the story. A former aide to Hillary Clinton, who helped set up her private email server, has told at least three congressional committees that he will invoke the Fifth Amendment to avoid testifying against his former boss. Brian Pagliano, who worked on Clinton's 2008 presidential campaign before helping install the so-called homebrew server system in her Chappaqua, New York home, was asked to testify about the server by the House Select Committee on Benghazi, the Senate Judiciary Committee, and the Senate Homeland Security Committee. Mr. Pagliano's legal counsel told the committee yesterday that he would plead the Fifth to any and all questions if he were compelled to testify, according to a spokesman for the Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley. The lawyer says, we understand that Mr. Pagliano's response to this subpoena may be controversial in light of the current political environment, but we hope that members of the Select Committee will respect our client's right to invoke the protections of the Constitution. Jim, those would be protections against self-incrimination, meaning a potential crime is knowingly committed here, which would suggest there's a lot more than a shrug involved here.
Yeah, I saw a couple people saying on Twitter, but look, we on the right should not be giving this guy grief. Constitutional rights, that's what we're all about, which is absolutely true. Having said that, we are free to interpret that as a sign that, there's something interesting going on here. And by the way, if anyone thinks we're being excessively harsh on this guy, look, actually, it makes perfect sense for him to plead the Fifth because, if anything, as the lowest man on the totem pole, he's the one who's going to get thrown under the bus. Right? I mean, he's the guy theoretically with the most to lose. Hillary's got friends in high places. This is the guy who can't count on a presidential pardon if it really push comes to shove. So, you know, the idea that he's pleading the Fifth now has all kind of people wondering about, what if the Bureau then offers him a deal, right? If they offer him immunity from prosecution, doesn't he have to talk? I mean, there's all kinds of ramifications from this. And the bottom line is, I think it was, you know, Chuck Todd had said this morning, this is about as bad a development for the Hillary camp as you could get, because this indicates there is something there. This guy is afraid of criminal prosecution. If he didn't have security clearance and he's the one who's running the servers that has all this classified information on it, then yeah, he could be in really serious legal trouble. And he'd have to say, look, I was just doing what Hillary told me to do, which could end up being more trouble for her. So we'll have to see how this shakes out. But another bad development for her, which at this point may be the bad martini for us because we'd still like a very damaged Hillary to be the nominee.
All right, on to the bad martini now. And that takes us to Rowan County, Kentucky. I think most of our listeners have followed this story. There's a county clerk there named Kim Davis. She has refused to issue marriage licenses following the Supreme Court's decision in June, where they found a constitutional right somehow for a same-sex marriage. She was taken to court by same-sex couples who refused licenses. She lost to the district, at the appellate, and at the Supreme Court. She still refused to issue the licenses, and so she was summoned before a federal judge, David Bunning, son of former Senator Jim Bunning. He's a Bush appointee, Bush 43. And he did not fine her. He sent her to jail as a result of her refusal to follow the court orders. Fierce debate, particularly on the right about this. You have some saying, look, she's a government official, even though it conflicts with her beliefs. This is what she has to do. If she were in the private sector, it'd be a different story. Others say, well, there's not actually a law. It's only a Supreme Court decision. There's no actual statute, federal or state, that she's violating. And then, of course, there's the conscience and religious expression clauses here. So, Jim, a fierce debate, but tossing her in jail is, I think, a move that surprised a lot of people yesterday.
It did. And I just tell people to pay attention to NRO. My colleague David French practiced law in Kentucky, is familiar with this judge and has, I think, some good insights on this. My perspective, look, I want everybody's freedom of conscience to be respected. If issuing a marriage license to two people who are gay violates your conscience, then I'd like to find some way for you to not have to do that. Although keep in mind, you know, resignation is always an option, right? I mean, if you really want to be if it's an act of civil disobedience, if you want to be someone who will take a stand for your cause, you do kind of have to recognize the consequences or accept the consequences of taking that stand. What I didn't quite understand, it looks like this is what's going to flow out from here, is that the deputies of her, other people who work in the clerk's office, will be issuing it while she's in jail. Now, my understanding was that she was not allowed, most of her staff agreed with her, but basically because the clerk's signature had to be on the licenses, she was refusing to do any of them, and you know, that's the case. And thus no one could get any. The moment you're saying, I won't allow myself to do something that'll violate my conscience, and I won't allow anybody else to do something that violates my conscience, I feel like it's a different category here. I kind of feel like at that point, no, now you're saying you want to impose your view of what's right and wrong on these people. And it's contravention of the law. Like, we don't like that Supreme Court decision, but the fact that we don't like it doesn't mean it's not in effect. Now, having said all that, the judge throwing this person in jail, like, I almost wonder if this is some sort of like reverse psychology way of turning her into a martyr or something like that, because it just looks like something out of 1984 or some sort of like giant Leviathan state saying, no, we've decided that your viewpoints are criminal and we're going to toss you in jail forever. I mean, Greg, I don't understand how you can do this when there are dangerous criminals walking the streets, like, you know, Hillary Clinton.
Yes, sadly, she will do far less jail time for her compromising of national security potentially. So very interesting. Expect this to be a big question probably at the next debate, and maybe more debates to come, because you've got Huckabee and Cruz saying if this continues, you're essentially saying that devout Christians or devout people of faith in any way could be drummed out of public service. So we'll see how that plays out. And speaking of the next debate, it's September 16th on CNN, in addition to Jake Tapper and perhaps other people from CNN, as we announced several months ago, radio talk show host Hugh Hewitt will be among those questioning the Republican hopefuls in the main debate. And he has obviously had many of the presidential candidates on his radio show, most of them multiple times. And yesterday, shortly after Donald Trump signed the pledge that he would endorse whoever is the Republican nominee and not launch a third party run if it's not him next year, they got to talking about some other things. And he got the Hugh Hewitt quiz. And here's a montage of how Hewitt asked him about key terrorist figures and how Trump responded.
I'm looking for the next commander-in-chief to know who Hassan Nasrallah is and Zawahiri and al-Julani and al-Baghdadi. Do you know the players without a scorecard yet, Donald Trump?
No, you know, I'll tell you honestly, I think by the time we get to office, they'll all be changed. They'll be all gone. I knew you were going to ask me things like this, and there's no reason, because, number one, I will hopefully find General Douglas MacArthur in the pack. Those are like history questions. Do you know this one? Do you know that one?
I don't believe in gotcha questions. I'm not trying to, you know, quiz you on who the worst guy in the world is.
Well, that is a gotcha question, though. I mean, you know, when you're asking me about who, you know, who's running this, that is not, I will be so good at the military, your head will spin.
It's not gotcha. I'm trying not to do that, but
well,
I wanted to see
like
if
gotcha.
You're
asking me names that, you know, I think it's somewhat ridiculous, but that's okay.
Do you think if I ask people to talk about those three things and the differences, that that's a gotcha question?
Yes, I do. I totally do. I think
that's interesting. I just disagree with it. I kind of figured that.
I think it's ridiculous. First day in office or before then, right at the day after the election, I'll know more about it than you will ever know.
So there you go, Jim. I think a lot of people remember George W. Bush getting quizzed on some world leaders back in the 2000 campaign, and a lot of people didn't like that. Obviously, the terrorist leadership, and it's going to be one of the major foreign policy challenges for the next president. So having a pretty good command of that subject isn't probably too much to ask. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out in the debate. And if it doesn't play out well, I think Hugh Hewitt might be ready to expect some heightened Twitter traffic.
My first thought, Greg, boy, who couldn't be assured by that thought of that gentleman as commander-in-chief, huh? I'm going to know more about that later, and it doesn't really matter till then. So what are you worried about? Having been a former guest host of Hugh Hewitt, frequent guest on his show, Professor Hewitt does give you an open book test, right? It's not like he's never mentioned The Leaning Tower by Lawrence Wright. It's not like he's never mentioned the Ohio submarine. Some of these topics, like if you listen to Hugh's show at all, you know they're big deals to him. Two, I think at some point you've got to have at least some familiarity with this. But Trump rejects the idea that he needs to know it. It's like, no, I delegate. I'm going to find the right people. Well, boy, I certainly hope if that's the case, he really does find the next General MacArthur. But it's funny he uses that example. I'm going to find the next MacArthur. Didn't Eisenhower have to fire MacArthur?
Truman did, yeah.
Or Truman did. Okay, so like at some point you have to be able to know when the people you've entrusted to these positions are making the wrong decision. And Trump has such utter confidence in his ability to pick the right people to worry about the details. I'll make my one molecular level defense of Donald Trump. Greg, how many Republican presidential candidates do you think could really give you a good explanation of the differences between Hezbollah and Hamas?
I could count them on one hand with fingers left over, probably.
Most Americans know, you know, Hezbollah is bad guys and Hamas is bad guys. And they're both they're both anti-Israel. They both fire rockets. They're a bunch of militants. I went and I checked, and basically one has a yellow flag and one has a green flag. One has more of a uniform style, and the other's got more of the standard suicide bomber style fashion choices. They're both bad guys, and we don't like either one of them. And I kind of sympathize a little bit with Trump. Clearly, he went into this and felt blindsided by those questions. On the other hand, you are running for president. This is a tough job. You it's not unreasonable to expect some grounding in all this. And if you ask the same questions on Ohio-class submarines and stuff like that to Jeb Bush, he asked a lot of tough questions of Ben Carson. And you know, anybody who's, oh, Hugh Hewitt's part of the liberal media, Greg. Laura Ingraham observed that Hugh Hewitt is the new Katie Couric.
Really?
Yeah. I'm just going to leave you in stunned silence on that one. I can't think of a better note to close out the crazy martini on, Greg. Study, guys. Not just about doing, you know, the fun interviews and things like that. Sometimes they expect you to know things. And, you know, I understand this morning Trump is declaring Hewitt as a third-rate broadcaster, denouncing it as gotcha questions and all that kind of stuff. That's really reassuring to see him throwing a tantrum after this.
CNN's loving it, though. The ratings expectations are...
Oh, my. Could you just imagine when they start staring at each other in that first debate? For Mr. Trump, this series of questions will be on world capitals. Yeah, just a little more than, you know, 2 weeks away. Can't wait.
All right, get the popcorn ready. Have a great weekend. We will be off on Labor Day, back on Tuesday. Jim, have a great weekend.
See you Tuesday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Have a wonderful Labor Day weekend, everyone, and join us Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.